our country is divided. People point fingers at one another without taking responsibility for their own words and actions. Poor decisions, mistakes, blame. The cycle is accelerating. Over the past 3 years, our guest today, Charlie Serafin, surveyed hundreds of people across the United States. Each one agreed that they have a quiet little voice that tells them when they're about to do something they know they shouldn't do. We know better, but we do the wrong thing anyway. Have you ever wondered why? Well, we're going to talk today with Charlie and see about that one stupid mistake. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Dr. Henderson. Thank you so much for having me on your program. I'm totally blessed to be here.
Charlie, your publicist sent me 20 facts about Charlie. And that was all great, but it's too much for me to summarize here for the people. So why don't you tell them about maybe your top 5 facts about Charlie that they would be interested in knowing?
Well, I grew up in a small town. I've always had an appreciation for others. I had, I think, a spiritual awakening at a very early age, and I am, every day that I wake up, I'm grateful to God for the blessings in my life. And like so many people, I have experienced hundreds of what I call little miracles, wonderful things that have happened to me that are not explained through traditional science or traditional means, and I've been very, very fortunate and blessed that way. And I worked in the media business as a kid. I grew up working at a little local radio station, and I went on to have some big titles in major markets across America. And then I had the opportunity to work in professional sports. I loved baseball, so I worked in Major League Baseball for 10 years as a chief revenue officer for a couple of different teams. And I taught college for a while. But when I retired, I thought about what I might do next. And I've always written, and so I started writing essays and with no rhyme or reason. And it wasn't until I wrote the last one that the Lord spoke to me, and I found out that it really should be a book, and it turned into a book.
Well, that's great. One stupid mistake. Charlie, can you tell me the difference between one mistake and one stupid mistake?
Well, the way I look at it, Dr. Henderson, I think all mistakes in time end up being stupid mistakes, because when you make the mistake, you go, oops, you know, I shouldn't have done that. That was a mistake. But as time rolls on and you look at it, if you look at it a year later or 5 years later or 10 years later, given the knowledge that you have, we tend to look back and say, God, that was really stupid. You know, what was I thinking at that point? How could I have done that? And the distance between the bad decision and with experience tends to turn almost all of our mistakes into stupid mistakes.
Well, would you say, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but would you say that that small little voice inside of you that tells you something and you go against it is pretty much always a stupid mistake?
Oh, there's no question. Every time. And I'd go further to say, and I wrote the book for a broad audience, and I've had some of my Christian friends say to me, you know, you didn't really put God in the forefront, and you know, one close friend who wrote back and said, there's one thing missing, I'm not seeing enough of your faith in your book. And I did it intentionally, right or wrong, and I don't know, and I guess in time we'll know whether or not that was a stupid mistake, but I wanted the book to have an appeal to non-believers as well as believers, because I believe that quiet little voice that I talk about a lot is really the Holy Spirit. It's the voice of God within us. We all have that spark of God that was put put in us at creation. And it does speak to us when we're open to it, when we want to hear it, when we believe that we can hear it, and when we take the time and do the work to hear it, then it's there for us. It's a wonderful resource, but so often it's lost. And so I think that quiet little voice is really God inside of us.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, Charlie, because that's what I believe too. But so many of the people in the country do not have that spiritual understanding, and they might say, well, that quiet little voice is your conscience. And I think that your conscience is hard to define because who knows what your moral values are and where they come from and things like that. So either way, conscience or Holy Spirit, whatever it is, you can get to it better by doing certain things, right?
Absolutely.
Can you tell me some of the things that would make you more in tune to be able to hear that small little voice inside of you so that you don't make stupid mistakes?
Well, Dr. Henderson, I know that so much of your work is focused on addiction. And it really wasn't until becoming familiar with some of your work that I really put two and two together. And I want to give you credit for that, because I believe that one of the addictions in contemporary society is noise and confusion and chaos. And I believe that there are a lot of people, particularly young people, and I don't mean to pick on them, but they've become addicted to the noise and the chaos of their electronic devices. They're constantly walking around with their earbuds. You know, you see people going for a walk in nature, and they have something going into their ears other than the birds and the sound of the wind. And you see families going out to dinner, and the first thing they do is they take out their personal devices, and they're texting, or they're watching a video, or consuming it some way, instead of enjoying the company of their own family and their loved ones who are right there in front of them. And we've all seen it. You know, you go to a restaurant, and you can see people sitting across the table from one another, and both of them, instead of engaging with one another, are engaged with this noise, this chaos, whatever you want to call it. And that aspect of our culture, social media, whatever, there are a lot of benefits and a lot of wonderful things. Our voices today are communicating with millions of people thanks to the technology, but everything in its place, and it's created sleep disorders. So how many people, and I've spoken to hundreds of them, who have a very difficult time sleeping, and they have to take some kind of medication take a pill so that they can go to sleep, to try to quiet the chaos and the noise in their head. So I believe that the single most important step that an individual can take in order to connect with that quiet little voice is to listen to the sounds of nature, natural things, to be able to find that peace and quiet. There's a reason those two words go together, peace and quiet, is attainable through meditation. And in a perfect world, people who could meditate great, you know, God bless them, and they're generally healthier, happier, and in good shape. Or people who pray every single day as a part of their routine, when they wake up in the morning, before they go to bed at night, before their meals, there are a lot of opportunities. But so many people are not praying, and a lot of people can't meditate, because there's too much noise and chaos in their heads.
You know, I've been in the addiction field for well over 30 years, and when I tell somebody that that's what I do, they say, well, it's not my problem. I'm not addicted to drugs, alcohol, or tobacco. And I say, whoa, wait a minute here. there's at least 30 different types of addictive behaviors that I treat, and drugs, alcohol, and tobacco are not at the top of the list. Well, what is at the top of the list? Well, overeating is at the top of the list. And just what you talked about, all your devices, gaming, Facebook, telephones and everything, is right up there in the top three. So when you're listening to us talk today and we're talking about addictions, don't always think of drugs, alcohol, and tobacco. I mean, they're important, but they're not the most frequent addictions that you, your family, and your neighbors have. I just want to get that off my chest.
Couldn't agree more. And what I've tried to share, and again, I'm using first person, but the reality is, what I wrote and my work product came through me. It's not just me. I really felt that. Dr. Henderson, I would wake up in the middle of the night, and I'm a great sleeper. I can put my head on the pillow, and I sleep like a baby pretty much every night. But I found a couple of years ago, I was really disturbed. I was disturbed by watching the news and reading the stories of the news, and I found myself talking back. I had been a newsman for many years. I've covered lots of stories. I've seen some horrific things. I've seen some wonderful things. But I found myself talking back to the news and saying, became the title of the book. How could they be so stupid? How could an intelligent, educated, affluent person do such a dumb thing? What in the world were they thinking? And it really started bothering me to the point that I went up and I started going up to strangers and I said, excuse me, I'm working on a project. Would you mind helping me? Would you share a mistake that you've made? And their reactions were so incredible. 98% of the people that I asked to share a mistake just ran away. They said, oh, there have been a lot, but I let me get back to you, or I can't think of one right now, or I just really, I don't, they just didn't know how to answer. They fumbled and fumbled and really were so uncomfortable talking about a mistake. And I thought, God, that's so strange, because for me, I could take your whole program today and tell you all the mistakes I've made. That's when I got to the second question, and I started asking, but do you have a little voice inside you that tells you when you're about to do something you know you shouldn't do? And to my amazement, and every single person, 100%, some were agnostics, some were atheists, some were Christians. Some believed other faith systems, but every single person, young, old, rich, poor, every ethnic group, they all answered the same way. Well, yes, of course. So I put the two together and I said, why do we make stupid mistakes if we have an internal mechanism that can help us make decisions? Why, what's the disconnect and why isn't it working? And what I came up with was this concept of restlessness and the lack of peace in our lives, the lack of quiet makes people do things that they know they shouldn't do, but they're not paying attention. They're not in touch with themselves. And whatever their faith structure, whatever their belief system, and I'm an optimist, so I like to think that, God loves everyone and he's there for everyone, regardless of how many mistakes you've made in the past, regardless of what you've done before. He's there for you. All you have to do is just reach out and let him take your hand. But they can't get in touch with it because they're just not peaceful. And so I came up with, I learned it from an old gentleman. It's an ancient tradition, and it's called a listening meditation. And I encourage people in my book, One Stupid Mistake, I encourage them, every chapter is a different spin on the same kind of listening exercise. Take 5 minutes a day. And I would say, if you're praying, you're already there. If you're praying 20 minutes or a half an hour or an hour a day, you're in great shape. It's very unlikely that you have an addiction if you can spend an hour a day in prayer. But if you can't, start with 5 minutes, and if you don't know how to pray, and you can't meditate because you can't calm your mind for that long, just listen. Close your eyes and just listen. Try to identify a sound, and then try to identify a sound that's further away, and try to identify a sound that's further away from that until you can hear something that is as far away from you as you can possibly hear. And then just stick with that sound for 5 minutes. And at the end of that period, believe it or not, when you open your eyes again, you will feel that refreshed connection with your inner self. And I believe that if you open yourself that way, God will begin to talk to you, and you will hear your quiet little voice get louder and louder and be more clear, and it will really help you with all of your decisions.
Well, I was up night before last at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I decided to do that. And so I started listening, and the only thing that I could hear was a clock ticking. Tick-tock, tick-tock. And I tried to listen for something past that, and it was just absolutely quiet. What does that mean?
Well, isn't that a wonderful thing? I mean, when you're really focused on the passage of time, I think it helps us to understand our mortality. I think it helps us to understand the urgency when we are awake of every moment and how precious they are. Every one of those little ticks is a gift from God. And our ability to connect with that peacefulness. Now, if you listen to it and you're annoyed because of the passing of time, or if it upsets you in some way, then obviously it's a failed experiment. But I believe that even if it's all you can hear is the tick-tock of the clock and the passing of time, that it can help to relax you. And I know, Dr. Henderson, for you, that when you stopped listening, you were even closer to God, because that's your nature. That's where you're predisposed. But I'm imagining a person that doesn't know God. And that's really the person that I really wanted to connect with the most and say, if you don't know God, at least know peace and quiet. Because I believe that if you can get to peace and quiet, you can find God. You know, a lot of these essays, I said before, I sleep like a baby. Sometimes I'd wake up in the middle of the night and the same thing. And I'd have this thought, and it was like, what in the world? And I finally trained myself, get up, get out of bed, go sit down at the computer. Sometimes it was a phrase, sometimes it was a sentence, sometimes a paragraph, sometimes a whole page. But I would just get it out, and then I would go back to sleep. And I believe that was divine inspiration. And I believe that the little stories, and I have 21 little short examples and stories of people making decisions, I believe that those came through me and into this book to help someone else. And anecdotally, so far, I've gotten some wonderful emails from people who have said that simple little exercises or one chapter or another or one example of a stupid mistake really resonated with them, and they have resolved to change their lives for the better.
You know, every day we hear about famous people in the news who are busted either by just the story or by actual jail for having done things that you would call stupid mistakes in the past. And stupid mistakes don't grab you immediately. Sometimes it's years before you have to pay the penalty. But people like Bill Cosby, for example, a whole life making stupid mistakes. And I could go on and on and on, but what does it say about people in general who continue to make these stupid mistakes and don't seem to realize the problem that they're having in their lives.
I think that's what came out of me asking people to share a mistake. I think the reason that they don't learn from their mistakes is because they don't acknowledge their mistakes. They don't recognize them. They might know at the very instant, and I'm convinced that they do, that every time that he did something that was wrong, or any of these other people, and we could spend hours just listing the famous celebrities, politicians, business leaders, media personalities, and that's what I'm talking about. It seems to be coming more and more and more that, oh my God, oh my God, what in the world were they thinking, right? So I believe that they, when they did it the first time, they went against their conscience, they went against their quiet little voice, and then because they didn't say, I'm sorry, oh Lord forgive me, I know what I did was wrong, but because they didn't, because they got away with it, or they thought they got away with it, then that prompted them to repeat the same mistake. So one of the lessons that I'm trying to teach is, we all make mistakes. We are all sinners. We're not perfect beings. We're all flawed. But when we do something that is against our own being, when we know we've done something wrong, we have to acknowledge it. We have to stop right there and say, oh, that was wrong. That was a stupid mistake. And I pray to God for help in avoiding that situation in the future so that I don't make the same mistake. But however you do it, you have to focus on the mistake for a little bit. And you have to really think it through and own it. But if you deny it, or if you think you got away with it, or you push it to the back of your subconscious and you don't embrace it, then you are absolutely positioning yourself to repeat the same mistake. And after a while, that becomes a way of life. And the example that you gave with Bill Cosby is someone who for years and years and years repeated the same behavior. And in the beginning, I'm sure he knew it was wrong. And at the end, I'm sure he knew it was wrong. But it took the outside world to shine the bright light on it for all of a sudden this wonderful career, this beautiful facade of an incredible family man and a great life and everything else, it was completely trashed and ruined. And there's such a wonderful lesson in that for all of the rest of us. So if you're carrying that one stupid mistake around with you that you haven't really admitted to, that you haven't put out in the light of day and owned up to, that you haven't somehow confessed, then you need to do it, because guaranteed, it's not going to go away. It's going to stay with you, whether you're ever discovered or not, because it's going to eat at you and eat at you and eat at your soul until such time as you are lost.
You know, in the world, there's a battle between good and evil. And I have my own opinion, which is, we may get into or not, but what do you see as the cause of evil? And I'll give you an example. Here, very recently, a man with hate in his heart killed many people in a synagogue in Pittsburgh. Now, for a person to not be able to feel empathy and compassion for human beings and be able to just slaughter them without even thinking about it, that is terrifically evil in my mind. Where does this evil come from?
I think evil has existed from the beginning of time, from the Garden of Eden. You know, it's to me, and you're much more of a scholar. I'm a layman. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not trained as a medical doctor. I have no credentials other than life experience and observation. But I know that in this first story ever told about human beings that was ever written, it was passed down as an oral tradition, and it was written for the first time, we have the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. And isn't it interesting that the tree in the center of the garden is known as the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the tree of the knowledge of right from wrong, the tree of decisions, and that's the beginning. So in human nature, we've always had free will, and we've always had the dark side in existence. And I think to glorify the light, but that's just my optimism and my personal opinion. So the evil has been there forever. With this particular individual who walked into the synagogue with firearms and killed 11 people and wounded others, I can't know what's in his heart. I don't know how messed up he was. But what I'm almost positive of is that the noise in his head was so loud that he allowed himself to be consumed by so much external of distraction that he completely divorced himself from that God spark that lives within him. And he drowned it out. And I don't think that the average person will get to that point where we're going to do such horrific things. But I think every day when we make stupid mistakes and bad decisions, when we go against that quiet little voice, I think it's the result of that detachment, which is exacerbated by the noise of the world. You know, I'm sure he consumed a lot of media, you know, both social media online and the Twitter account and the other social media accounts and the television news reports and the cable news and just worked himself into a rage and got so angry that he really lost touch with his own humanity. And that's the manifestation of evil. Just as addiction is a manifestation of Satan in the world, his addiction to hatred and anger is he opened himself up and evil just crawled right in there and took a prominent place.
Well, Satan is a powerful force, and in years past, I thought he was just a story. But during my career in trying to help people with addiction, I found out that Satan is a real person, and he is there every day to try to get into your mind, to tell you lies, to get you going down the wrong path so that he can make your life absolutely absolutely terrible. And then at the end, he will kill you or kill someone you love as a result of some of the things that you've been doing. I see that over and over and over again in the people that I talk to with various addictions. And maybe some of the addictions aren't life-threatening, and maybe they are, but I believe that there's a force out there that is just waiting to be able to get into your mind and to lie to you and to encourage you to do things that little voice inside of you says, don't do it. Don't do it. So, that's what I think.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, the flip side of it, to go to the positive, Satan is a real person. It's a real force and constantly searching for new victims. But by the same token, if you expect those good things, if you have that wonderful connection, then, you know, I heard in one of your programs talking about parking spots, and I just laughed because it happens to me all the time. My wife always is amazed. She says, you know, how does this always happen to you? where we're the same thing. We go to the movie, I'll drive up to the front, and someone will back out, and I'll park right there. I'll go to a restaurant, and there'll be an open spot right in front of you couldn't get closer. And sometimes I consciously have to remember it's not a bad thing to walk, so I'll go to the back of the parking lot and make it a long walk just for the health aspect of it. But when I really need something, it's always there for me. And I believe that that's a function of working hard to exist in a state of grace, working hard to have an awareness of other people and other people's needs, to have kindness in your heart and forgiveness in your heart. And when we're wronged and when people say terrible things about us and when we're persecuted, we need to take that as a blessing. That's what Christ said. You know, if you follow me and you're persecuted for my sake, that's a blessing. Good for you. Way to go. And it's just so much of it is attitude. But for the purpose of one stupid mistake, smart decision making in a crazy world as a book and as 21 stories and with a meditation or a listening exercise in every chapter and a thought for the day, the biggest emphasis that I wanted to have is to have that positive attitude. And it's all kinds of little things. It's not just about mistakes. It's about looking people in the eye when you have a conversation with them. It's about waving to strangers when they drive through your neighborhood. It's about an awareness that the universe doesn't begin and end with you, but you're just a small part of it, and to try to make a positive contribution any way you can.
When you retold that story about expecting a parking place at a concert, that's in line with the law of attraction, which I think is somewhat of a New Age type concept, but it's very true that what you think about is what you get. If you think about something and it's negative, you're going to get negative. And if you think about something that's positive, you're going to get positive. So excluding all the religious applications, you are attracting what your brain is thinking. So just think the best thoughts and see what happens. And I agree with you. I get parking places at the front of the line all the time. Einstein said, you can believe that nothing is a miracle or everything is a miracle, and I choose to believe the latter. So if we're looking for miracles in life, they're going to come to us. And if we don't believe in miracles, we're not going to see them. And so when we're talking about One Stupid Mistake, your book, we can either listen to our conscience or the Holy Spirit, however you want to phrase it, or we can deny it. And if we deny it, our life is going to be terribly different than if we accept it. And so I just make a plea for people to accept that truth and start listening to that little voice. And your book, One Stupid Mistake, is a great way to learn about it, to go through your exercises, and it would be a book that everybody on the planet would benefit from. So tell us how to get a copy of that book.
It's available on Amazon right now, One Stupid Mistake. I have a website, onestupidmistake.com. They can write to me at charlie@onestupidmistake.com. I think if nothing else, if you just, if you go online and you go to Amazon or go to the website and look at the picture on the cover of the book, I had a friend who was inspired to create that picture for me. Look at the faces and identify with one of those people. And the top two rows of faces are people who have made a mistake. It's just the pain that you see in their faces is something. And the people in the bottom row are the people that have taken the time to be in touch with their quiet little voice. And there's so much joy. And just as you said, it's a matter of choice. You know, we all have it, and we all make mistakes. That's a common. And we're all going to die, you know, and that's the other thing I've heard you say, and so many people don't want to be aware of that. They're shocked, you know. You say, we're all going to die. You're going to die. And they think, oh, but I don't want to think about that. Well, you know what? It's not a bad thing. You ought to think about it once in a while. Your days are numbered. As soon as you're born, you're sentenced to die. So life is precious. Each second is precious. Do the best you can. You're going to screw up from time to time, but recognize that and don't run away from it. Own those mistakes. Learn to do a better job. And God bless you all. Thank you for listening.
That's great. I want to take just a minute to tell my audience about my new book. And I put 6 months into this book to help people with a significant problem. And that problem is trying to deal with their loneliness in life. They're lonely and they're looking for a relationship. And so what do? They do what's common and available. They go on a dating site. They go on Facebook. And they're looking for someone to satisfy that loneliness. And I would say that can't be satisfied that way. And so I wrote the book to tell them about the criminal international scammers out there who are just waiting to ruin your health, your financial health, your emotional health, your spiritual health, every kind of health that you have, because scammers, international criminal scammers, they're only interested in one thing, and that is getting your money. And as they get your money and they emotionally tie you up in the scam, it's going to play a significant impact in your life. And you were looking for something to take care of the loneliness? Well, you still got the loneliness. And my book, The Definitive Guide to Recognizing and Avoiding Romantic Scammers and Catfishers, will give you the opportunity of, before you get involved with these people, saying, I know that you're a scammer. I'm going to cut off my communication with you and do it, because if it seems too good to be true, it is. And so I spent 6 months going into primarily Africa, talking with and texting these criminals, and actually paid them to tell me their business, how they do it, to whom they do it, why they do it, all those kind of things. And I give you stories of actual scams in progress, so that if one of these stories you hear it, you know that it's not a real person. And I think that you would really benefit if you are lonely and if you're looking for a relationship. Don't be a victim. Read the book.
Dr. Henderson, bless you for that work, and it's so true. I have a short chapter on relationships, and even though I didn't write it in the book, as you were speaking, I remembered something that my father told me. He said, nothing good is easy. And what he meant by that is you have to put some effort in to get the result. And it's the same with relationships. If you're looking for a quick fix, if you think you're going to just type a couple of words on the screen and you're going to find, you know, the love of your life, it's just a false premise, because relationships, long-lasting, healthy relationships, are a lot of work. They don't. This doesn't fall into your lap because we're all imperfect beings, and we have to recognize that if we're looking for someone to cure our loneliness and to have a permanent relationship, that individual is flawed, just as we are. So it's compromise. It's learning to look past the little things that are annoyances and really connect with that inner spirit of the other person, so that you can have a truly meaningful relationship. So it's not easy, it's not fast, it's not going to happen instantaneously, and whether you're looking in a bar or a tavern or you're looking online, those are the wrong places to look. You know, join a good church group, you know, I think we can say that, you know, and find someone, find a person who shares your values and your faith, and build a relationship on trust and goodness and kindness and love, and don't feed your loneliness. So bless you for your work. I know it's a wonderful book, and I'm sure there are people, hopefully there's someone listening right now that says, you know what, I have been doing these dating sites. Maybe I should reconsider, and let me get Dr. Henderson's book, let me read it, and see if I can find some important pointers for my own life.
Thank you for that. Go over to romanticscammers.com, and I have a link where you can get a download for 99 cents. So money is not an obstacle. And share it with people that you know that have this type of loneliness so that they won't be victims of these criminals. Charlie, it was so good to talk to you today. We covered a lot of points. Is there anything else that you want to say to the people out there all around the world that are listening to you today?
I just say please take a few minutes today before the sun goes down, wherever you are, or if the sun's already down, take a few minutes right now. Close your eyes and just listen. Listen and find some peace. And the more often you do that, the more often that you pray, but at least listen. If you're not accustomed to praying, at least listen. Open your heart, open your mind, and the Lord will find his way to you, and you will begin to see all those wonderful little miracles that we talked about appear in your life. Your life absolutely can be changed, regardless of how sad you are, how lonely you are, how addicted you are. Your life can be changed, but you're the only one who can do it. You have to take a conscious step forward. God bless you. Thank you for listening.
You were listening to Charlie Serafin. One Stupid Mistake is the book. Go get a copy of it. Charlie, thank you again. We'll talk to you later.